Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Russ M., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And today's Friday, the 26th of July, 2024, and we're reading from the Big Book and More About Alcoholism. Page 35, that first paragraph, starting with what sort of thinking dominates, and ending with of what is he thinking? All right, so our readers, today we have for 12 steps, Paul P., 12 traditions, Tenzin P. Reading the text today is Nancy R. Page 164, Susan S.H., our backup reader is Amory M. Newcomer greeters, Vanita L. Second hour host is Jeannie B., and announcement is Kathy S. The reference numbers for yesterday, Thursday, July 25th, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 21,603, 21603. The 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,604, 21604. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and a practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I've asked Paul P. to do the 12 steps to read them. Sorry about that.
Paul P., compulsive overeater. These are the steps which are suggested of our recovery. 1. We admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. 2. Became to believe that a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we have harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continuously to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our consciousness of contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and the practice of these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for having me do service. And I'll pass.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Next up with the traditions is Tenzin P.
Good morning, everyone. Tenzin P checking in from New York. Here are our beautiful 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop compulsive eating. Someone's unmuted. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much. Wishing everyone a blessed day, and I pass.
Thanks, Tenzin. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from literature, then stop and share in what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year. For readers, it's 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we're back in more about alcoholism, obviously in the Big Book, page 35, that first paragraph, and we're reading, what sort of thinking dominates, ending with, of what is he thinking? And Nancy R. is going to start us off with the reading today.
Good morning, Nancy R., alcoholic, sorry. Nancy R., recovered compulsive overeater from online. What sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats time after time the desperate experiment of the first drink? Friends who have reasoned with him after a spree, which has brought him to the point of divorce or bankruptcy, are mystified when he walks directly into a saloon. Why does he? Of what is he thinking? of what is he thinking? So for me, my experience is that what I am thinking is I'm listening to my alcoholic strange twist of the mind that is telling me lies, you know, that I'm listening to, like, why bother? What's the use? You're eventually going to eat it anyway. Might as well just do it now. Those are just a couple of thousands of different iterations of my twisted thinking that eventually leads me to pick up. So that's the sort of thinking that dominates me. And as I in the past have repeated time after time, picking up that first bite. And the thinking is there, the distorted twist of the mind is there long before I pick that up. And, you know, yesterday morning I woke up restless, irritable, discontent, did my prayer meditation and connected with God through my God through the 11th step. And then, you know, it just was there, persisted as I was a participant in this meeting and then in another meeting after this. And, you know, it was just negative thinking and, you know, my life is awful and, you know, this why bother, like, you know, and there is nothing wrong with my life. That's the crazy, strange twist of the mind that is, that happens long before my mind even starts telling me to pick up. Another part of the thinking is twisted memories, you know, like, oh, remember how yummy that tastes? No, it didn't taste yummy. It was poison. It was absolute poison for my body. And I live a miserable life when I act on that thinking. And my sponsor says, you know, I'm not responsible for my, as an addict, I'm not responsible for my first thought, but I am responsible for like what happens next or the second thought. And the second thought, because of working the steps in this program and my relationship with my higher power, my second thought can be that pause. Thank you. Can be that pause that says, absolutely not. That's not what I do. Yesterday I did some acts of service and it passed. So that's what I have to share today, my experience, strength, and hope. Thanks.
All right, Nance, thanks a lot. Now we're going to open up the line for sharing. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day. So if you share it on Wednesday or Thursday, please step back to allow others get a chance. And please, one at a time helps me to hear everybody. And I know it's tough, but who's up?
Janice M.
Rivka R. Baltimore.
Janice.
Loretta H.
Rivka. Loretta.
Lisa B.
Lisa.
Mary A.
Jen B.
All right, so there's a Mary. You have Mary?
Yep.
What's the first initial of the last name?
A. Mary A.
All right, okay, and then there was someone after her.
Jen B.
Sonia S. from Pennsylvania.
Okay, Sonia. Is it Jen B? Is it Jen B?
Shanna C.
Oh, Shanna. We could take two more. All right, then let's just do this. We got Janice PM, Rivka R, Loretta H, Lisa B, Mary A., Shanna C., and Sonia S. All right.
You can add Reuven H. from Israel. Okay.
Okay. Who was that again? 1 second. Who was that?
Reuven H. from Israel.
You got it. You're in.
Thank you.
Aaron right. K., if you have the time.
All right, Aaron. All right. This is good for the first round here. Yeah, you got it. And everybody else, please press star 1 if you're not Janice P.M.
Okay, here I am, Janice P.M., gratefully recovered, a compulsive eater living in Massachusetts. Oh, boy, what sort of thinking? I can tell you about my sort of thinking before. When I first came to OA, to the rooms, and listened, my wonderful control of my mind, my rationalization. When somebody said they were diabetic, I said, oh, that's why they don't eat certain substances, because they're diabetic. Well, guess what? I'm diabetic. I became diabetic. So that wasn't a good reason, And then, like yesterday, I had a colonoscopy. Well, I haven't eaten for 2 days. Before I would have said, see, I haven't eaten for 2 days. I'm starving. I got to eat. That's the thinking. My thinking, that was my, what I thought, before. See, all thoughts are born, all action is born. They're born in thought. In other words, it's all the thinking, my twisted thinking it commands me. To think, to do, to act on what I'm thinking. I mean, it's so powerful, my diseased mind, to command me. It commands me to pick up that first bite. I always thought the problem was the right sponsor, the right food plan. Well, yeah, the right food plan, everybody has the right food plan that, that's in OA, supposedly, for them. But my thinking, it wasn't the food plan, because I had wonderful food plans. But the thinking that proceeded to pick up that first bite, it was embedded in my mind. It was so untrue, it dominated me. It controlled me to pick up for excuses, alibis, reasons, and some of them were good, some of them were true, but most of them, I was insane. So this is a very important paragraph, page 23 and page 30. What and why was my state of mind? Well, it tells me that I am powerless. It's my mind that is powerless. Because that has to be fixed. Yeah, some of us, not me, have a physical bypass. But I needed a mental bypass. And I did have a mental bypass when I got that feeling of that I really am powerless, aren't I? So the answer to restore my insanity to sane thinking was to implement these 12 steps by finding a power that would give me a mental bypass. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
All right, Jan, thanks a lot. Next up is Rivka R., followed by Loretta H.
Good morning. It's Rivka R., recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore. Thank you, Russ, for your service. I've been away for almost 3 weeks helping some of my kids, so it feels so good to be back on the line live. That desperate experiment of the first drink. So this is picking up after a period of abstinence. I know for me, after a period of abstinence, I would think, I got this. Like, I know how to eat. I'll just eat my protein and vegetables. I'll be fine. And I would rationalize that, now I could eat bread or other things, and before I knew it, I was like face down in the ice cream again. So what was I thinking? Like, it reminds me of that story about an addict when he's given a choice, like a life of a wonderful life of recovery filled with joy and connection and relief and freedom and peace, or a miserable life filled with obsession and disconnection and resentment and chaos and self-hate. And he says, let me think about it. That was me. Like, I totally can't think clearly and make any wise decisions in the disease because my freedom of choice is blocked. Like, I didn't know how to choose not to binge. I didn't know how to choose faith over fear. I didn't know how to choose principles over personalities. I didn't know how to choose essence over ego. Like, that only came with a surrender and a relationship and reliance on God. Now, if I have an insane thought, like, well, I'll just eat my protein vegetables and I'll be fine, there's like a deep awareness that, well, that's not going to happen. Like, it never has and it never will. And if I have an insane thought, like, oh, it feels so good to eat that, the same thought comes in, and then what? And I know exactly what the then what will be. So today, relief is when I put that food on the scale and I'm connecting with God. And life actually becomes very simple. Like, God's way, life works. My way, life doesn't work. And I drive into a brick wall. So what's my choice to be? And thank God I have that choice today. So I'm so grateful and wish everyone a blessed day. And I pass.
All right, Rafi. Thank you. Next up is Loretta H. I can't even understand my handwriting. Followed by Lisa B.
Good morning, Russ, and good morning. All along with my precious God, you are saving my life. Loretta H., recovered in North Carolina. Okay, Loretta H. is a real compulsive overeater. That's the first thing I have to remember every single day. Then I surrender to the God of my understanding. And the mind is very powerful, and mine is insane. This time it will be different. This time it will not hurt me, or no thinking at all. And that is where it says in the book, whatever the precise definition of word may be, we call that plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion, the ability to think straight, be called anything else? So definitely insane. And then, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And I have to remember that. It's in my bones, in my tissues, in my issues. It is on me. I'm grateful today that it is, because I know today that the only thing I can do is surrender, seriously understanding real recovery. And my thinking is the debating society, and I don't have to make that choice. I am a real alcoholic, and that God will protect me if I do the next right action. So if we are planning to stop thinking, there must be no reservation of any kind or no lurking motion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. That's on a page. I know, and my disease really radiates in the anorexic part. And the minute I think that it's going to solve a problem for me to stop eating, because it's been my cop-out since I was 4 years old to solve my family's problems, my father's alcoholism, whatever it was, my job. I took a job that kept my weight down. That was going to solve my problem. And today the solution is not that. Today the solution is God. And then, as somebody just shared, pause, pray, and use spiritual energy, and I can get through that. And with God's grace and mercy, I haven't had any cravings of the food. I do have a lot of cravings about worldly glamours, but today the food doesn't call me, but eventually it will if I go into the worldly glamours. So with that, I pass. God bless everybody, and seriously, you are saving my life. Loretta H. in North Carolina, signing off.
Thanks, Loretta. Next up is Lisa B., followed by Mary A.
Good Good morning, Russ. This is Lisa. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Thank you. My name is Lisa B, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in South Carolina, and I spell my name L-E-S-A. You know, I have to be reminded with this chapter that this is for the person that has been abstinent, sober, and, you know, why do they return? Why do they return? So the word dominates, controlling and ruling me. And food has been the solution. It gives me ease and comfort. So when I have that time away from it, you know, and I'm working with my recovered sponsor and I'm in the big book, you know, in the beginning things are going well, but the longer I'm away from that ease and comfort that I was getting from food and the behaviors and the ingredients, I'm getting restless, irritable, I'm getting frustrated. And I have to look back at look ahead at the promises, you know, as guideposts for me. The 10th step promises tells me that my sanity will have returned, that I will recoil as if from a hot flame. So it's God's spirit that transforms me. You know, it's not like a superstar sponsor or this amazing meeting or the power of this book. You know, it's God's spirit that really transforms me and gives me strength and wisdom and direction and peace as a result of going through the steps. But I have to be entirely abstinent. You know, it's like Bill says, in the doctor's opinion, it's imperative that a man's brain and body be cleared so that he can understand and accept what we have to offer. And when I was reading this chapter with my guide, when I was new, I was entirely abstinent, really, for the first time, truly. I had never put everything down, including the liquid substances. I'm not talking about alcohol, but other liquids. And every ingredient, it's really about the ingredients, the behaviors, you know, with the foods. And, you know, my mind was clear. I couldn't believe the silence that I had in my head. There was quiet, and I could hear her. And the more she talked about, not me, but the more she talked about herself and her experience as a compulsive overeater and what she was like, I kept identifying in. And that's the power of hearing a recovered fellow share about themselves. And I try to remember that when I share with fellows, not to talk about them, but to talk about me and my experience and what I was like, you know. And I just am so grateful for the peace and quiet because I could hear what she was saying and I could hear the solution coming through. But I had to move through these steps quickly so that I could be transformed by these steps in the slow process that transformation took place. And with God's power and grace, you know, I have that today. But still, the restlessness can come back. But I do recoil as if from a hot flame. And I cling, you know, to the grace of God. So in these steps. So thank you so much. I pass.
Thanks, Lisa. Before Mary shares, I just want to let you know where we're at if you jumped on a little later today. We're on page 35, more about alcoholism. Reading the first paragraph, what sort of thinking dominates, and ending with of what is he thinking. All right, Mayor, you're up.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Russ, for your service, and thanks everybody who's shared so far. My name is Mary A. I'm calling in from Portland, Maine, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Really grateful to be here with all of you today. And I just love this book, and I love every paragraph, but for this paragraph, what I really love is that it's helping us hone in on the understanding that this is a thinking disease. And so often when I try to talk with those who don't understand about what it's like to be a compulsive overeater, the culture associates that with weight and with body size, I know, and we know because of this work, that's secondary. It's like where it says elsewhere in the book that the bottles are just a symptom of what's actually going on. I have to look at my thinking. And when I step back, I actually had a situation earlier this week that I shared with my sponsor about there was an emotional situation going on in the family. And I found myself in the grocery store for a legitimate reason, and then saw the thoughts, those alcoholic thoughts come in about, wow, it would be really good right now to have an XYZ to help with how I'm feeling. So when this paragraph asks us, you know, what is he thinking? For me, it's tracing back, what am I seeking relief from? And where that leads to, with practice, what am I seeking relief from leads to, where am I being agnostic? Where do I think that the power that I can bring to this situation of my own volition is supposed to serve me and it's not serving me, and I'm unwilling to reach out to God in this situation? I'm just going to push harder, right? I'm going to push harder with my self-will to make things go the way that I want them to go. And then when they don't go the way that I want them to go, I need relief because the world is too challenging, too depressing, too whatever, too confrontational, whatever it might be. So for me, you know, of what is he thinking, either I'm not thinking or I'm seeking relief from something that has gone unacknowledged. And that's where the rest of these steps come in to help me with tools and practices that allow me to step back, to stop and say, wait a second, if lack of power is my dilemma, and my number one job today, my only job today, is to seek power so that I can be a conduit of that power out into the world and be of service, then I need, that's the thing that I need to look at. Where am I trying to exert power in a way that is false, and instead set that aside and seek out connection with true power, higher power, God, call it whatever you want. And when I do that, I get the relief that I was seeking through what I thought a bite could give me. And I no longer need to take the bite. Thanks so much, Russ. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you all.
Thanks, Mary. Next up is Shanna C. followed by Sonia S.
Good morning. This is Shanna C., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. And so grateful to be on the line, and thanks, Russ, for your service and all who have shared. I'm really not sure how much I can add to what has already been said. My hope and prayer is that my experience may can help somebody. You know, one thing that I can say is, like, for my whole life, looking back honestly, I never really looked at food as a solution, even though the text says that it was. I was never really one to say, you know, I'm going to go and eat like 6 packs of candy bars or whatever it was. I want to dive into this vat of whatever just to make me feel better. In fact, I was always repulsed at that idea. I never wanted to do that. The problem is I would forget how bad it sucked the last time I did it, and would do it again with the honest thought that I could control it next time, that I didn't want to eat that way. I knew food wasn't a solution or whatever. I knew it would make me fat. I knew it would make me feel bad. But I had the honest intention in my mind that this time I can do better this time. But, you know, but I would forget, and then I would eat it, and then all of a sudden I was eating more, and then oh, to hell with it, you know. I remember I always had the idea that I would love somehow someday to be able to sit, you know, at a football game, at, you know, Super Bowl party or whatever at my house, and have all these hors d'oeuvres of foods and stuff on the table and not have to worry about it or think about it and just have a few bites. I would try that. And then the next thing you know, I'm eating off the rails again. It's like, what the hell? I never really looked at food really as an easy comfort kind of thing, but I loved the idea of being able to control and enjoy it. The problem is that I couldn't. And when I got beaten into that state of reasonableness where I saw there was nothing that could help me other than an entire psychic change, and even the 12-step program gave me the words for that, but I just knew I needed to be different. It was explained yesterday on the meeting. I needed to be a different human. Otherwise, and there was nothing that's going to change me. I'd been in 12-step program for a long time and practiced this stuff, but I kept praying, and somehow, someday, on one day, I got to that point, was like, God, help me, I'm going to die. And then somehow it stuck, and I got put where I needed to be with who I needed to be and told the directions I needed to be told and was given the willingness and the ability. Every day I ask for it. I ask for the willingness and the ability to do this work and to stay abstinent and by God's grace, I'm still abstinent, and I still cannot believe it every day I wake up. And it's been almost 5 years now. It's a miracle. Anyway, glad. Hope this helps somebody. Glad to be here. Awesome. Glad to be abstinent. And so grateful that it's Friday. All right. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks, Shanna. Next up, S followed by Ruvain H.
Hello, this is Sonia S. from Pennsylvania, and thank you, everyone, for your service. And I really honestly did not want to share, but my sponsor is asking me to share, and I was just thinking after what everyone said that, that you know, this disease is honestly telling me that I don't have a disease. And I am back on day one. I was embarking on step four, but I'm back on day one simply because my thinking says, you know, the food is going to help with your pain and your frustration, or the food is a reward for whatever, or the food, you can put the food down tomorrow. So many rationalizations, so many like delusional thoughts and lies that this disease tells me. And, you know, I've seen myself repeat the same mistake over and over and over again, and it's absolutely insane. And, you know, I come to these meetings, abstinent or not abstinent, because I want to get well. And someone said that the noise stops in their head. And that's what I want. And I'm even thinking that maybe I should put down the coffee, which, like, I don't even like saying that out loud. But, you know, coffee, huh. So I'm grateful to be here, and it's hard being back on day one again, and very humbling, and I don't like admitting it, but there is also, I don't even know if I want to say freedom, but maybe there is freedom because I'm being honest, and this program is about honesty. So thanks for letting me share. Hopefully I made sense. I hope everyone has a great day. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Sonia. Next up is Ruvain H. followed by Alan K.
Thanks for your service, Russ. Ruvain H. from Israel, recovered compulsive overeater. In jeopardy of insane thinking. This is a great paragraph for me to share on. I'm just reflecting on that as a human being, and this is what I've learned through my life. I'm 71 now, that I have instincts to live and breathe. That's part of being human. And those instincts involve or include eating and drinking and other behaviors. And growing up in my life, these initially led to joy and comfort. And maybe again, that this will work to bring ease and comfort. However, I have an illness, and my illness is of insanity. And that illness of insanity includes craving and obsession. And in my obsessive thinking, there is really, at some times, it's constantly thinking about that which provided me with some ease and comfort, like food or other things, and going towards not thinking at all, because it's compulsion, it's craving that takes over, and it's only a physical craving, and that I want to relieve that with what at some point in my life worked. So it's an illness of insanity. It's a compulsion from the person and for myself if I do that, to use my alcoholic foods. It's an experiment of I don't have to treat my illness. I don't want to treat my illness. I want to gain that ease and comfort that I got at first when I was younger or before I knew better. Why? I must. I don't want to think. I want to quench my craving. And all of this allowed me and allows me, if I do this or as I do this, to try to fight my fears, to be selfish, to lie to myself and others, and be disturbed. And the answer that we're getting from this book and I've gotten is that my goal in life is to do God's will and to make God's will my will. And as a human being, as an addict, I want to not follow that. And that's my challenge. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruveen. Next up is Aaron K, and then we'll take another list.
Morning, everybody. Morning, Russ. This is Aaron K, recovered compulsive overeater in Michigan. At times, you know, looking back after a binge, I would tell myself I must have been in denial. And then it was pointed out to me at one point, very helpfully, that in that moment before picking up the bite, I'm in delusion, not in denial. And what's the difference? So with a delusion, I really believe whatever lie the disease is telling me to get me to pick up in that moment, in my heart of hearts, you know, I've heard you can put me on a lie detector and I would pass that polygraph. I believe it is true. Usually whatever thought I'm having is maximizing or exaggerating the relief I will get from the food and minimizing the consequences. It's thinking out of proportion. And why am I even thinking about food? It's because I'm in delusion and believing delusional thoughts about the events of my life. You know, it's like I've come to understand that I look at my life sometimes through this, or a lot of times, my default is to look through this fisheye lens where, you know, all my mistakes are exaggerated. It's, you know, I look ahead at the future and I'm terrified. It's this doom think, you know, just doom is lurking around the corner. It's the thoughts tell me I'm separate from you, in competition with you, that they exaggerate the amount that other people are thinking about me. They tell me what other people are thinking about me, which is rarely true. And they tell me that I need to feel some kind of way about other people's opinions. I mean, these are just like, I could spend an hour listing examples of the delusional thinking that if I follow my head rather than my feet, eventually the delusional thought about the food will come and I will be, we all know, we've all been there. And I've heard so much, you know, this morning from you guys that is going to keep me hopefully one this day out of that delusional frame of mind. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
All right, Aaron, thanks a lot. So now we're going to open up the lines for Sharon again. And although we vary expansively, I ask that you limit your share to every third day. So if you see any of the Vision for You meetings this week, which on Wednesday or Thursday, please refrain to step back.
Larry
so,
K.
Who's up?
Ben B.
Okay. Mary.
Henry.
Okay.
Leland.
Hold on. Hold on. I got about Larry K. And then we need, please, one at a time if you can. I know it's hard because we're on the phone, but it's tough.
Anne Marie M.
Jen B.
Okay. Anne Marie.
Toby W.
Jen
Leon P.
Toby W. And then I.
Toby.
Leon
w.
P.
Leon P.
Yes.
Rachel KP.
All right, Rachel KP. I think I got you, Toby. I got you. So this is what we're going to go with. Larry K, Amory M, Jen B, Toby W, Leon P, and Rachel KP. And if we have space, I'd definitely get you in. Sorry about that. I don't mean to be rude. All right, Larry, you're up.
Oh my God, Russ, thanks. You're doing a great job, buddy. Larry K. recovered. You know, if you're having trouble with this, and I just speak from my experience when I was having trouble, because we do, look up the idea of cognitive dissonance. Anyone can Google that, cognitive dissonance. It's not your solution. A solution is a relationship with the higher power. We know that if we're on this line. But cognitive dissonance, it's really, for me, it helps with this paragraph because it's a case of detecting your own hypocrisy. And hypocrisy is such a powerful motivation for finding excuses and justifications. Oh, I know that oh so well. You know, for example, if I have unjustly, you know, picked up the food once again in the face of the truth, I may be unable to admit to myself that I'm at fault, that I have some responsibility. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to convince myself that what I did isn't so bad. It's justifiable, because really cognitive dissonance results from a tension between my desire and my belief. And there's an inconsistency, and this inconsistency produces discomfort and anxiety. This discomfort is the dissonance. And I want to decrease that inconsistency. So I'm going to rationalize, justify, do all sorts of things. You know, in Aesop's fable, I'm no expert on this stuff, but in, you know, the fox tries to get his hands on some grapes, but he can't get some grapes. He can't acquire these grapes. So at some point, he convinces himself in the fable that I really didn't want those grapes that badly after all, you know. So the importance with all of this is, we need a sudden shift in attitudes, and we need to appreciate that we need a sudden shift in attitudes. And how will this revolutionary shift come about? I mean, how in the world is it going to come about? Can you think your way through it? Can you read your way? Understanding cognitive dissonance isn't going to give you a sudden shift, that I can tell you. But I'll tell you what it may do for you. What it may do for you is it may allow you to put the damn food down in the face of pain and suffering, emotional, physical, of putting the food down, and go get a Sherpa. Go get someone who will take you through the steps quickly. Go get a Sherpa. Put the food down. Get a Sherpa. Work the steps. Follow the instructions of the steps precisely. Don't do it perfectly because you couldn't if you tried. And then go help others. Put the food down. Get a Sherpa. Work the steps. Go help others. And I defy you, if you do that, to not have a sudden shift to bring you into alignment, oh my gosh, with the higher power of your own understanding. That's the whole goal here, is to be in relationship with this higher power. This is on a spiritual realm. It's not on a cognitive realm. So anyways, with that, I pass. Thanks, Russ. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Lar. All right, next up is Amory M, followed by Jen B.
Thanks so much, Russ, for leading the meeting. This is Anne-Marie M. in South Carolina, gratefully recovered through God's grace. I don't know if you could hear me. And, you know, by following the directions in this big book, I was just thinking about my experience from this morning where I'm supposed to go paddleboarding with a friend, and the last few days we've had these thunderstorms just pop up, thunder and lightning. And my friend is really eager about going, and I had some fear about telling her. And so I prayed about it. And, you know, I didn't hear God tell me one way or the other, but what God was saying was, listen to my inner voice. Like, that's where, you know, that's where you find me. You know, the great reality is deep down within each of us, it says in the big book. And I know that, that God is within me. And I took the time to pray about it. And I was able to give her a call right before the meeting and say, you know what, I'm not going to go. I just think it's too risky. We could just have a thunderstorm. And that was it. And I had peace about it. When I was compulsively eating, I didn't have the power of God. You know, I was powerless over food, powerless over my thoughts even. And I didn't have that connection with God. Actually, I didn't know that the deep reality was, you know, the reality was deep down within me. And so I wasn't able to avert those thoughts. I wasn't able to, on my own, talk myself out of it. I tried a lot of times. I'd be driving home from work, and I'd say, with the steering wheel tight gripped, I'm not going to stop at the convenience store. I'm not going to stop at the convenience store. And all of a sudden, the car's turning into the convenience store, and I just say, the heck with it. You know, I might as well just go ahead and do it. So many times over and over again. And for me, I know, because I didn't have that relationship with God, and I am so grateful for this program, for the steps that have given me a stronger relationship with God. I've always had a relationship with God, yet it wasn't as strong as it is now, and every day it gets stronger. And I just ask to do His will. So with that, I am going to pass. Thanks.
All right, Anne-Marie. So I estimated the time wrong. We only got time for one more. So Jen B is going to be our last share. And I'm sorry, Toby, Lynn, and Rachel. Please stick around for the next meeting. All right, thanks. Next up is Jen B.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Russ, for your service today. My name is Jen B. from New Jersey, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a longtime listener, first-time sharer. I always want the first bite to work for me. I want one bite or one serving to prove that I'm a normie. I can eat like other people, even if I'm not craving a food. If the allergy of the body is in remission, then the obsession of the mind is there. If I see someone eating something that's a red light food for me, I convince myself that I can eat it too. No matter what that person is, if that person is looks physically well or looks like a compulsive eater, is a child, is an elderly person, if I see somebody eating one of something, I want to eat one too. Even if, you know, they may have my same disease, they can eat one, why can't I? Sure, I can eat one, and then I'm going to go later and eat 10 more hidden in isolation, no matter what. And I've managed to remain obese and in physical disrepair by just having one bite or serving every day and every day, and it never ends there. The mental twist leads to my eating, and that's going to lead to waking up the allergy of the body, and then my disease is in full control of me physically, spiritually, mentally. Today, I'm 2 months abstinent, and I'm at a weight that I haven't been in over 2 years. Because with the help of God, I've refrained from taking the first bite and giving in to the obsession of my mind. And by the way, 2 years ago when I was at this weight, it was from extreme restriction and using diet drugs that, I had to buy illegally from other countries. And I just did this with God's help in 2 months. And this is just my beginning. I spent years trying to have one bite, and it isn't for me. It will never be for me, and that's okay, because I have the solution, and I have you guys to remind me what the solution is every morning, and I've God to hold my hand as I walk through this one day at a time. With that, I pass. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thanks, Jen, and thank you to everyone who shared on this meeting today. Also, for everybody who did service for this meeting on Fridays in the month of July, appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you. And this is team effort. So anybody like to share, just stick around for a second unrecorded hour study after the closing. So today's share ID, Friday, July 26, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,606, 21606. We'll now close the meeting with a reading from the Big Book on page 164. And Susan S.H. is going to read for us. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you. Thank you, Ross. Thank you for your service, too. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.